tēnā koutou katoa, nau mai rā ki te pai o te Waonui. Komiriana Johnson aho. E haere ake nei, pressure mounts on the Otago Medical School to front up on a proposed cap to its Māori entry pathway. Regional COVID-19 modelling shows over 1,300 Māori and Pasifika would die in counties Manukau alone if the virus ran rampant, and over 5,000 people take up the challenge of speaking te reo Māori as much as they can this month. But first, pressure is mounting on the Otago Medical School to front up to Māori and Pasifika about a proposal to cap admissions through the Māori entry pathway. One of the designers of the scheme says it was tabled with a sense of urgency and with no input from Māori. The pathway currently has no limit and gives Māori preferential selection into medical school. Te Aniwa Hurihanga Nui has the story.
Professor Peter Crampton is incredibly proud of Otago University's Mirror on Society policy, which aims to create a health workforce that reflects New Zealand's diverse communities, particularly Māori and Pasifika. He helped create the policy in 2012 when he was the Pro Vice Chancellor of the Division of Health Sciences.
We are definitely making a difference to the health workforce and changing the way the future will be in respect of the makeup of the workforce, and the university's is very clear about celebrating those successes.
The policy is indeed making a difference. Latest figures show the number of Māori graduates in 2018 almost doubled from the previous year to 42. But there's still a long way to go. In 2018, Māori doctors made up just 3.5% of the workforce and Pasifika doctors only 1.8%. Mr. Crampton says he's not sure why aspects of the policy are suddenly up for debate.
The issue was brought up with a sense of urgency, and I'm not sure where that sense of urgency came from. It's a good discussion to have. I think everyone welcomes discussions about the health workforce.
But he is certain of one thing at least. Any discussion about the future of the health workforce must be informed by Māori and Pasifika.
Māori and Pacific leadership voices have been completely absent from the discussions so far, and there is an urgent need to draw those voices in formally.
In a statement, the current Pro Vice-Chancellor of the Health Sciences, Professor Paul Brunton, admits the Associate Dean Māori and the Associate Dean Pacific were not present at an initial meeting over the document, but did attend a subsequent meeting. He says if a formal proposal for change is developed, all stakeholders, including Māori and Pacific representatives and students, will be asked for feedback. But the president of the Māori Medical Students Association, Isaac Smiler, says students want to know now what's being planned and are frustrated the Vice-Chancellor, Harlene Hain, has so far refused to meet with them.
We know these policy changes are coming from the top of the university, and so she's continued to block and deny us a chance to voice our concerns and to ask our questions to her.
He says the situation is strengthening the resolve of Māori and Pasifika students to make their mark at the university and in the workforce.
We're finding strength within ourselves and between each other, tautoko and support ourselves and to remind ourselves that, one, we will be as competent and safe as any other graduate, and two, that our people need us.
The Vice-Chancellor denies she has refused to meet with students. She says she would be happy to do this after they have discussed their concerns with the Pro Vice-Chancellor of the Health Sciences and the Medical School Dean. Mo te hōtaka o te ata. Ko te aniwa, Hurihanga Nui. Aho.
A researcher modelling COVID-19 death rates for different ethnicities estimates 600 Māori and over 900 Pasifika would die in the county's Manukau district alone if the disease was allowed to run rampant. Research published in the New Zealand Medical Journal on Friday, which is a continuation of study findings first published in April, estimates the rate of Māori deaths would be double that of non-Māori. The report's co-author Andrew Spall says they also found Māori and Pasifika are also more likely to be hospitalised with the virus due to poorer health and are more likely to get infected because of overcrowded housing.
We're building up a picture here where we can produce enough information that we can actually look at regional impact by ethnic group. right, which will be, is absolutely essential in planning to try to get ahead of any community outbreak. Getting ahead of any community outbreak is going to require not only good action on the ground, but that action has to be informed by really good quality local information. And so we've painted a picture here of the need for good quality information and the need to prevent this outbreak occurring in high-risk communities. But what we've yet to see is a response that is informed by high-quality information that can get ahead of this in high-risk communities, especially in the regions.
What does the government need to take from this report and its findings, and how should it incorporate that into its COVID response?
First of all, this confirms the elimination approach. I mean, we just cannot let this illness get established at a community level in New Zealand. We have already had overstretched healthcare services that were delivering inequitably for Māori and Pacific people, and this would just build on that inequality. So the burden of this outbreak would fall disproportionately on Māori and Pacific people, and that would occur at a younger age. So it confirms the approach. Secondly, it confirms the absolute need to focus on high-risk communities. And thirdly, by focusing on those communities, it means you have to work with those communities and have readily accessible regional information that is ethnic-specific in a really timely fashion. Because we can't wait 2 or 3 weeks to get information from the Ministry of Health if there's a community outbreak up in the far north or on the coast. The decision-makers, both locally and in central government, need to have that information in a really timely fashion so they can respond.
Those decision makers, who would that be? Who needs to get that information in those communities?
That would vary from community by community. So up in the East Coast, a lot of that work is being done at a hapū level. Up north, it's an iwi consortium. So we need something that is flexible to in response to the strength of those local communities.
You mentioned earlier in the interview that we're starting to see regional information or regional data. What can you tell us about, I guess, you know, say in Tamaki, what that regional, what the data is saying about the IFR estimate in Auckland?
Based on our work, if what would happen in counties Manukau, for example, we would have around 600 Māori dead for the duration of the epidemic, about 950 Pacific people who would die, and that's, you know, over 5,000 Māori requiring hospitalisation, hospital-level care, and 7,500 Pacific people, just in counties Manukau alone, and over 1,000 Māori needing ICU. I mean, the impact of this would just be absolutely devastating.
And that was Andrew Spall speaking to me.
A Māori specialist in artificial intelligence says it's only a matter of time before a Māori or Pacifica is wrongfully arrested because of a false match on facial recognition software. Police have been working on a $23 million upgrade of their biometrics images system, which will be run by the US firm DataWorks Plus. Multiple studies have found such software is less accurate at matching non-white faces, but the police say forensic experts will review all matches to ensure accuracy. Anei takupurongo.
In July, a US senator from Ohio accused DataWorks of exacerbating systemic racism through its facial recognition software. It comes after African-American man Robert Williams was incorrectly identified by facial recognition software for committing a crime he didn't do. There are fears this could also happen in Aotearoa when the police upgrade their DataWorks Plus facial recognition system later this month, which will make it easier to match poorer quality images. Kuraitiana Tairu, who's completed a PhD in Indigenous ethics in data collection, says this system hasn't been tested on New Zealand faces, which will increase the risk of false positives.
My concern is we're going to see an increase in false arrests with Māori. I'm also concerned that the system wouldn't have been trained on tāmoko moko kauai. So we have no idea how the system will react to that.
He says it's only a matter of time before a Māori is falsely arrested because of this software. There is well-documented evidence facial recognition software is not as accurate with non-white faces. A study from December by United States Department of Commerce agency found higher rates of false positives for Asian, African Americans and Native groups, which included Pacific Islanders, in facial recognition systems trying to positively identify a face with a single photo. They also found false positives for African American females in facial recognition algorithms that are matching a single photo to many photos. This type of facial recognition matching is often used to compare a target with a database of people of interest, meaning this inaccuracy could result in a false accusation. Auckland University Professor of Law, Jane Kelsey, says these issues of accuracy should have been considered by New Zealand Police.
There have been such issues for so long about racism in New Zealand policing, and for them to say that something as controversial and sensitive as this did not require any form of disclosure or proper evaluations that involved independent assessment against not just privacy rights but te tiriti. That is a really, really bad call.
She says the unauthorised use of facial data fails to consider the right of Māori to their own information and how and when it's used.
Data is not an abstract, commodified entity. It is whakapapa. And you can't go taking without consent, not just individual but collective whakapapa. So it's not just who's going to be targeted. It's a question of not actually understanding fundamental issues about Māori data and Māori data sovereignty.
Mr. Taiuru says police should have consulted with iwi and Māori technology experts before deciding to proceed with the upgrade. But in a statement, the National Manager of Criminal Investigations, Superintendent Tom Fitzgerald, says police did not undertake consultation with any outside agencies because it was only an upgrade. It says anyone concerned about software falsely identifying people can be assured all matches will be reviewed by a qualified forensic specialist and then peer-reviewed by another. Kormiriana Johnson, DNA.
Kei te whakarongo mai koe ki te Waonui. You're listening to Te Waonui, a wrap of the week's Māori news on RNZ National. I'm Mirianna Johnson. A Māori academic who has come forward alleging casual and structural racism within Waikato University says her concerns have been met with resounding silence from the university's leaders. Professor of Indigenous Education, Linda Tuhiwai-Smith, is one of six academics who have written a 13-page letter to the Ministry of Education, alerting it of their concerns and demanding racism within the university be dealt with. The allegations include Māori expertise being ignored, tokenism, lower pay for Māori staff, and no meaningful commitment to the Treaty of Waitangi. Linda Tuhiwai-Smith told our reporter Te Aniwa Hurihanga Nui earlier in the week that not a single leader from the university has been in touch.
There are two ways that you can attend to our claims. One is you can go into defensive mode and, you know, scurry around trying to manage us as a crisis, and I think that's what's happening, to be honest. The other way is to say, oh my God, there's a problem, we need to sit down and talk about it, because why would staff do this? Why would senior staff speak out? You know, I'm at the end of my career. Why would I sort of want to do it at the end of my career? What's led to this? Why would staff want to do this in a protected manner? Why don't they feel safe enough to come out and say these things, because we are covered by academic freedom?
Did you expect them to reach out to you since this has been made public?
I expected certain kinds of responses, but this is also the University of Waikato, and things kind of broil along kind of quietly for a while. But, you know, in terms of leadership, a phone call is quite good. Someone acknowledging that there is a problem has been identified and trying to talk about that, that would be good. But silence is an interesting response.
In your letter to the Ministry of Education, you allege instances of structural and casual racism. Can you give me some examples of the types of casual racism you and other staff members face on a day-to-day basis?
For many Māori who work in the universities, especially where they are, you know, they're on their own, casual racism can vary from comments made to people about your people, you know, that might refer to something in the news, the mispronunciation of your name, all the way through to examples of younger scholars having their work dismissed or being asked to contribute to the Māori part of a project, but then the science that they've got a PhD in is completely ignored.
And that was Linda Tuhiwai-Smith speaking to our reporter Tianiwa Hurihanga Nui. The University of Waikato has publicly rejected all allegations. However, it was revealed on Friday the university would commission an independent review led by Sir Harawira Gardner and Heke Aparata into the allegations starting Monday next week. It will also review its Treaty of Waitangi obligations. The Supreme Court has decided the appeal of child sex offender Peter Ellis should continue despite his death. Mr. Ellis died in September last year, just 2 months after his application to appeal against his remaining 13 convictions was granted by the Supreme Court. The appeal process usually ends if the appellant dies. However, citing tikanga, his counsel Natalie Coates told the Supreme Court in June this year that his appeal should continue. She told our Māori News director Marnie Dunlop that although the details of the decision have not been released, it's a significant ruling nonetheless.
It certainly will set a precedent, as this is the first time a substantive criminal appeal has been able to continue in light of the death of a person. Now, of course, we don't know the reasons that the Supreme Court have made the decision to allow the appeal, and we made a number of different arguments in that respect, including in relation to tikanga, but of course we won't know the specific precedent until the substantive decision is released.
So essentially, just speculating at this point, I just want to quickly go back to the hearing in June. You told the Supreme Court that the case should be reopened because the mana of a person remains after their death. Can you just remind us of those key arguments pertaining to applying tikanga to common law that were made back then?
Yeah, sure. So we weren't arguing that tikanga Māori applies as of right to Mr. Ellis as a non-Māori. Instead, we were arguing that tikanga Māori is relevant to the development of the law, so that when a judge is developing the law, that they not only can draw on that thread of law that exists and comes from England, but that where appropriate, it's also relevant to draw on tikanga and tikanga principles. And we said that it was relevant in this particular case.
And is this common for decisions to be made and substantive judgment to follow?
Yeah, it's not uncommon for decisions to be made and then reasons to be given in a substantive decision at a later point.
Based on the hearing in late June, I mean, the significance of this regarding tikanga could be really significant. I mean, are you quite hopeful that this will come out when that substantive appeal will happen?
Yeah, as I said, we did make a number of different arguments on why this case should continue, and we had that specific hearing in relation to the relevance of tikanga. We're certainly optimistic that those tikanga arguments will form part of a substantive decision when it's finally released.
And in terms of processes, what happens now?
So now everyone will gather together and try and come up with a hearing date, effectively, and a timetable for that. I anticipate that won't likely be until next year, but that'll depend on the availability of parties, counsel, and of course the court.
And that was counsel for Peter Ellis, Natalie Coates. And finally, over 5,000 people have signed up to speak te reo for the month of September as part of Mahuru Māori. This year, participants can sign up to either speak it for the whole month, an hour a day, 1 day per week, or 1 week of the month.
Our Māori News Director Marnie Dunlop spoke to the reo expert Paraone Gloin from Te Wānanga o Aotearoa, who started the kaupapa in 2014 as a way of broadcasting te reo and normalising it in everyday dealings. He told Marnie that the uptake is increasing every year, and obviously, in keeping with the kaupapa, this following interview is in Te Reo Māori Anake.
Ko te mahuri Māori he kaupapa, hāpai i te reo, kōrero i te reo Māori, ara he āki i te hunga kōrero Māori, kia kōrero Māori mo te roa ngāti o te marama o mahuru me ki te hepetema.
Mō tēnei tau, he hanga rere ngā kētanga o mahuru Māori?
Ko tētai rere ngā kētanga pia, ko te wānanga o te roa te kaitautoko nui i te kaupapa i roto i ngā tau. E harai te mea nā te wānanga o te roa te kaupapa, nā tātou katoa te kaupapa. Hoi no i roto i ngā tau, he nui tā te wānanga o te roa toha i ngā rauimi. Engari, i tēnei tau, katoa ngā rauimi me tiki ake i te ipurangi, kātahi kārua. Ko te rauimi nui ko tātou tonu, ko nā kai kōrero i tō tātou reo. No reira, e aro ana mātou ki te āki i a tātou anō, ki te whakapau i o tātou kaha, ki te kōrero Māori, i tēnā o te tatari noa ki a riro mai etahi rauimi. Ko tētai anō rerenga kētanga, pea e harai te rerenga kētanga, engari he ki ake ki te hunga e pirangi noa ana ki te whakamātou i te kaupapa mo te tahi haora anake i a rā, e paitonu tērā. Engari kia mahi a tērā mo te roa ngāti o te marama nei.
Ehea ngā tangata kua rehita i tēnei tau, Paraone?
Taku mōhio kua kuatu i te rima mano i rehita mai ki te kaupapa. Engari ahakoa te ngā rehitatanga arā noatu etahi e mōhio au kāri i te rehita, kāri rehita mai, engari kei te mahi i te mahuru Māori. No reira, ai, ko taku tūmana ko kā piki ki te ruatakau mano i roto i ngā tau i te mea e ai ki ngā tatauranga, kuira te rahinga o tātou te hunga e kōrero ana i te reo Māori.
He aha o kupu awhina tohu rānei kia mātou e rārau mai ana ki tēnei kaupapa e mahuru Māori e ai te ngākau Māori, o tira e Māori tonu ai tēnei marama o mahuru.
Pai tēnā pātai, ko te rerenga kōrero i tēnei tau, hikitia te reo, hikitia te tangata. No reira, ko te kaupapa nei, he kaupapa āki i a tātou ki te kōrero i te reo Māori, e harai te kaupapa tātā i etehi ki te kōrero ane. No reira, kia ngākau maha ki tonu tātou, kia rangi Māori e tātou, kia kaha hoki tātou ki te āwhina i te hunga iti nei te mōhio. Engari kia kaha hoki tātou ki te akiaki a tātou anō ki te kōrero i te reo.
And that was Paraone Gloin talking about what Mahuru Māori is about, the uptake this year, and his advice to all those participating or wanting to participate, to help those who are learning and to encourage each other to give it a go for the normalisation and revitalisation of te reo Māori, te reo rangatira. And that's Te Wao Nui for this week. Kei tō mātou whārangi ipurangi, tō mātou pūrongo, hei kimi mau, kei raro i te tāpanga, te ao Māori. You can find all our stories on our website, rnz.co.nz under Te Ao Māori. Noho ora mai, tēnā koutou, katoa.